在滴滴答。
Hello there, David Rutledge here with you on RN and welcoming you to Earshot, RN's new flagship documentary program. Now we're off to the northern Flinders Ranges country, which belongs to the Adnya Martina people. Adnya means rock and Martina means people, and so these are the people of the rocks. Adnya Martina songs, stories and lore are all part of the Yuramuda or Dreamtime. And today, in the first of a two-part series, we're following the journey of one of the major creation ancestors, Yulu, the kingfisher man. Yulu is moving across country, followed by two Aukara, giant rainbow serpents. And as we follow him, we find out why the coal that's mined at Lee Creek today belongs, from an Adnya Martina perspective, to Yulu. As senior cultural custodians take us through the country, we learn about important features of the landscape brought into existence by these ancestral beings. And in a contemporary sense, we're asked to consider the profound implications of digging Yulu's coal from the ground.
We call these stories Yuramuda. So do you know what Yuramuda means?
Fire. Fire is a very important part of our culture. It's because, see, we need to communicate with the spirits of this place. Smoke that goes through this valley here is letting the spirits know that we've got special guests on the place and we'd like the spirits to welcome you here just the same as we welcome you. Letting the spirits know that you're our special guests. But it also tells the unwanted spirits, because they are good and bad. The unwanted spirits, we say to them, you know, we want you to keep your distance and not intrude on our visitors. So that's why we got this little fire going tonight as part of that. So you get a few of the women together and we then put this little song. It sort of talks about how people come from different parts of the world. Some over the water, others like a bird in the sky. But we welcome you to this country through our music. That's basically what I'm going to be singing about.
Senior Adnya Martina cultural custodian and linguist Terence Coulthard first welcomed me to Adnya Martina country in 2010 when I travelled to Igawatta in South Australia, a very remote and quite beautiful community nestled in a series of rolling hills on the Copley Road as you head out towards Arkaroola Wilderness Sanctuary. I travelled there to start work on a children's storybook in collaboration with the Adnya Martina community.
See, it was all different clans here one time. There was the Adiora tribe, like from up here, other side of Ultana Station, Bilarapa, Walpi, and Kuaini. Then they all got together in one big clan, and they said, we'll all go as Adnya Martina, rock people.
First of all, Adnya Martina, which is our group, our nation, the Adnya means rock, and Martina are the people. So we are the rock people of the Flinders Ranges. And our spirits could actually go back and be part of the rock of Mother Earth. Everything you see around us, we believe holds the spirit of our ancestors. So we need to take care of our ancestors, you know, and take care of the environment because they're family.
There's 2,500 Anumatna people. We've got native title with the whole Flinders Ranges. We control land between Lake Torrens and Lake Frome. And as far as south as Quorn.
In March 2009, the Adnyamutna people won a native title claim, which covered 41,000 square kilometres of country, stretching east from the edge of Lake Torrens through the northern Flinders Ranges and towards South Australia's border with New South Wales. From an Adnyamutna perspective, much of this country was brought into existence as a result of the journeys of important creation ancestors. Many thousands of years ago, these ancestral beings travelled across what was then a flat and featureless continent. It was their journeys and the events that occurred upon them that are believed to be responsible for bringing into being the features of the landscape. This series of programs follows the journey of Yulu. Yulu was the kingfisher man, a Wiliaru or fully initiated man, and the leader of ceremonies for the Adnyamutna people. The story tells of his travels all the way from the northern Flinders to Wilpena Pound, or Ikara, the gathering place, as it's known to the Adnyamutna, and on toward Mount Chambers near the edge of Lake Frome. Yulu was followed by two Akaru, or giant rainbow serpents, and his journey and the events that occurred on it mark the beginning of all things for the Adnyamutna people. This is a creation story, and Yulu, along with the serpents, were some of the first ancestors of the Adnyamutna people. They laid down important stories and instructions in the features of the landscape that they brought into being as part of Yurramudda.
We've got certain beliefs. Now, people call these beliefs the dreaming. You know, we don't like that terminology. We prefer to use mudda, Yurramudda. Yurramudda explains our spiritual existence, you know, our spiritual well-being and what makes us spiritually function. Yurramudda tells us about the environment, how the environment come to be the way it is and what we can do to live in harmony with it. Our mudda is written in the landscape here. Our mudda is saying that living among us was a spiritual leader. Some may call him God, Buddha, Jehovah, but we call him Winyamurana. And while Winyamurana lived among us, he taught us all the Yurramudda in relation to how we can live in harmony with Mother Earth. So what appears to be just a creek bed, a mountain, a valley, a plant, an insect, a reptile, there's a mudda associated with that. And if you actually look into the mudda in more depth, it'll give you some rules for living, and it'll give you some understanding of, you know, how our people had this complex understanding of the environment.
The entire continent of Australia is covered with a thick weave of tracks, marking the epic journeys of the ancestral creation beings. These journeys form detailed maps of country, and the songs and stories laid down during them hold vast libraries of important traditional knowledge. Wudyamaruna, the spiritual leader for the Adnyamutna people, determined which knowledge of law, language, skin and kin relations, songs, dances and ceremonies the creation ancestors left behind. This knowledge they carried was laid down in the landscape, and their journeys were responsible for bringing it into being.
We believe the southern part of the Flinders Ranges was created by the two Dreamtime serpents, the Akaru, the rainbow serpents, and the northern part of the Flinders Ranges from Hot Spring, Prahlin and Hot Spring, go further back, was created by the two kangaroos, Manja and the Hoodloo, the grey kangaroo and the red kangaroo.
You've got many stories that tell you about how country came into being, haven't you?
Well, we are told it was formed by Hakura. The mountains, the gullies, the springs, the wakals, the sand hills, even the sky. Got our mura, the sun, the moon, the stars, the Milky Way. They're all cultural things, goes with the Dreamtime story. And the birds and the animals to go with it, yeah.
And one of your biggest stories is the story of the kingfisher man, Yulu, isn't it?
Yulu's, that's a dream, big Dreamtime story from Lee Creek. Yulu started from there, made his way down Wilpena Pound. Yeah.
So during the creation time, the Uramutta time, when everything was all formed, the Adimutna people lived on this country, which was all flat, and living near Mount Termination, at a place called Klakarapuna, was the Yulu, the kingfisher man. And he was the leader of all these ceremonies. And it was at a time when the Adimutna people wanted to put certain people through these rituals, these ceremonies. And
what were the name?
Turkey man was
Ural Kikagayata, Kalkabana. Yulu Uralam, Uralam, Michikanga.
A long time ago, in the Flinders Ranges, Mura, the ranges were flat with no hills, and the Adimutna people lived here on this country. Living in a place called Palkapana was Yulu, the kingfisher man. Yulu was the leader of all the ceremonies. Everyone was gathering at Wilpena Pound, waiting for Yulu to lead the ceremonies. They grew tired of waiting for Yulu and sent a message that Wala, the wild turkey man, would lead the ceremonies if Yulu did not come down. Yulu was worried that Wala would not do the ceremonies properly, so he made a fire and cooked a couple of dampers for himself. The smoke from the fire was a message for the Adimutna people that Yulu was on his way down to lead the ceremonies.
Meanwhile, not only these people read the smoke signals, the Akura, the rainbow serpent, read it as well. So they then decided that they would follow the kingfisher man down to Wilpena, because where he was going, there was going to be lots of people.
We're going to follow the journey of Yulu and the Akura all the way from Kalkapana to Copley, down to Ikura or Wilpena Pound, and out to Mount Chambers, a distance of several hundred kilometres. Myself, sound recordist Taz Miller, and geologist Gavin Spokes will be travelling through country with senior Adnyamutna cultural custodian Cliff Coulthard.
My name is Cliff Coulthard. I'm an Adnyamutna man from the northern Flinders Ranges. I'm talking about a mountain, it's called Kalkapana, which is Mount Termination, and it's situated west of a small town called Indus. Now, the story starts from there. Kalkapana is where Yulu, the kingfisher man, stood on this big mountain. He was looking south towards Wilpena Pound. This landscape here it's a bit flat. Not very much vegetation. It's mainly saltbush, bluebush. Now, the story starts from here, Kalkapana. We'll go and see each place. Then we'll go to the coal fields where he lit the big fire. And then we'll go and see the Copley Hills. And we'll see the mountain ranges south of that as it goes into Wilpena Pound.
So we're setting off from the starting point of Yulu's journey, Kalkapana, where he lived on a small mountain that we can see set in an expansive flat landscape. From here he saw a message or a smoke signal coming from Ikura, Wilpena Pound, that told him the Adnyamatna people had gathered there ready for an initiation ceremony, and that if he didn't come soon, they would ask the Wild Turkey Man to conduct the ceremony. Wild Turkey Man was a Vadnapa, or a first-stage initiated man, whilst Yulu was Wiluru, a second-stage or fully initiated man. As such, only he was allowed to conduct the initiation ceremony, and so he began to travel down towards Ikara, stopping first at a place that's now called Lee Creek.
Now we're heading towards the Lee Creek coalfields. You can sort of see it on the side here. They've been mining here since 1944. This is where the Yulu came down from Mount Termination, Kolkapuna. And this is where he got his fire stick.
Then the Yulu, he sends a smoke signal from Wilpena Pound. So he came to this area here, and there was a great big forest here, this all thick scrub. So he got his fire stick, he lit the forest up, made a big bushfire. And that was the smoke signal to let the people know at Ikara that he was coming down to conduct the ceremony. Ikara is the Adnyamatna name for Wilpena Pound. It was called Ikara from the beginning of time. And when the white Australians came, they named it Wilpena Pound. Ikara means a gathering place.
Yulu was worried that Wala would not do the ceremonies properly. So he made a fire and cooked a couple of dampers for himself. The smoke from the fire was a message for the Adnyamatna people that Yulu was on his way down to lead the ceremonies. My name's Arthur Brady. I come from Copley. I'm an Adnyamatna Yura. I want to know this story so I can pass it on to my children, because without these stories, Adnyamatna people won't be the people they are today. The thing that makes us who we are is our stories, and that's it. Culture is important because without culture, a tribe's not a tribe. It's lost.
So at the moment, though, although we're standing where in that dreaming story there was a big forest and Yulu stopped and had a fire, right now we're standing in the same spot, but what I'm looking at is an enormous coal mine pit.
Yep.
So basically we're standing in Lee Creek coal mine, but interestingly also we're standing next to what's been called a small museum, and inside that cage there's some huge, enormous calcified mulgalogs and two very large, maybe a metre and a half in diameter, fossilised rocks that are completely round and look actually exactly the shape of damper. And from what I understand, Yulu cooked two damper in that fire that he had here.
Yeah, the two dampers that were cooked by Yulu, they're part of the ceremony because they're called mukumai. Mukumai means that when you go through a ceremony, the payback has to come and they have to give you some food, you know, like damper. So that's what we call damper mai.
So is it for the initiates?
Yeah.
So he cooked that damper here for that purpose?
Yeah.
But actually he left them here?
He left them here, yeah. He left it here because he was an Ari, because he didn't want the wild turkey man to play his role.
And what's the Adnyamatna story about this find that, you know, the miners pulled this up from underground?
Yeah, I don't know when they pulled it up, but I reckon it was around the 70s, perhaps 70s or 80s. And when they pulled it up, a lot of our people, the old Wiluru men, were still alive. And they said, oh, yeah, that's the Mukumai. That's where Yulu cooked them here, but he left them here.
Yeah, my name's Terry Fuchs. That's spelled F-U-C-H-S. And not to get confused, because it does sometimes, but never mind. And my family were brought up in the Copley area, and my father was a miner and a driller, and his father before that. My part of it, in those days, I had to do the drilling and the blasting, so, you know, we had to blast everything. And the guys that would come along afterwards with the dozer and things, and if they were ripping things, well, they would think of something, the pinging effect when they hit these petrified logs and things. So they pushed them aside, but then when they noticed that there was something different than the normal iron strata, well, then they started pushing them aside and saying, well, hang on a minute, this is a little bit different to what we're normally getting. So probably only about between 50 and 80 metres below the surface, it was these round, like egg-shaped stones. They were the ones that were most intriguing.
You know, they are incredible, those damper-like structures. Yep. I mean, what do you think they are in diameter, would you say?
The biggest ones would have been, 2 to 2.5 metres across, probably a metre high, I would say. And they were spherical, round, but sort of, flattened,
And with those enormous petrified logs, I mean, really, you can completely envisage a fire setting. And in the precise location that the old people said that fire setting would lie.
Yeah.
Quite amazing, really.
It is quite amazing.
So there was no real understanding at the time in the culture of the mine in terms of the connection with the Adnyamatna interpretation of where the coal came from.
Of course, I'm not sure whether a lot of people going back in the 50s and 60s would take much notice of anything like that anyway. And of course, some of the indigenous people, the Aboriginal people from the area, I mean, they weren't encouraged either to say, oh, look, come and tell us about your stories. You know, like, who was running around saying, tell me about your stories about, you know, your dream time and whatever, you know. That was the way it was at the time, yeah.
And Lee Creek coal mine is Ulpawadpun. Fire got burnt down to a cinder. That's what they call it, Ulpawadpun.
So just briefly show you what we do here. It's a very big operation. So this pit alone goes for nearly 7.5 kilometres. We have a lot of big equipment here. The simplest rule really in the end is if anything's bigger than you, you keep out of its way. This year we'll move about 2 million tonnes of coal. In the end our coal is used for power production down in Port Augusta. Well, up to about 40% of South Australia's power comes from here. This year we'll move 22 or 23 million cubic metres of dirt. So we'll be making money in the end.
Yeah, you're really glad to have you at Lee Creek.
Why is the coal relative to Yulu's story?
Because if he didn't light the fire, the coal wouldn't have been there.
Because the embers of the fire are seen to be Yulu's coal?
Yes, and even the song that we sing today.
At Lee Creek there's a fire burning underground.
We believe that it was Yulu's coal before white men came to this land.
Where all our coal is found. it was a king. For here's a way of letting people know you was coming.
And that people always talked about Yuru's coal and it's burning underground.
That will be a pound. Yuru, Yuru, and home, and it was so free. He came over here from the Queeny territory. Down to Wilpena to start a crobbery. Yuru, Yuru, he came for a ceremony.
Hi, my name's Noel Wilton. I'm an Adyamatna person. I live in Nipabana. And you know, and Yatta is a wonderful, not to Yatta, Adyamatna Yatta. This is my country, this is Adyamatna country.
How do you think that people had that sense of what was lying under the ground? And it's not just from the perspective of the Yuru's coal story, it's numerous correlations between the finding of resources and the traditional stories that have already, thousands of years ago, mapped the fact that those resources lay there. People said Yuru's fire is burning underground, and that is the coal that has been found and dug out today. How do you think that they knew that those resources were there?
Because of their dreaming stories. Wherever there's dreaming story, it always have some sort of mineral on it. Like the bronze winged pigeon, where it flew across here and left a trail of gold. Like when Yuru lit that fire, he left a coal field. When the Akara vomited salt lake water at Lake Frome, it left uranium. So the dreaming stories, this is how the people are told about these minerals, all these stuffs are down here.
Seems like a fascinating correlation for me, you know. Instead of having, as I'd imagine, as you drive up to that mine, there would be one of those yellow triangular signs that says, radioactive, do not enter. There's a beautiful poetic story told by your people that says, don't go to that place. That place is a place of sickness. You'll get sick if you go there.
And this is the most incredible thing about it. People were able to tune in to a lot of that. That's why there's evidence now that you actually see a lot of the artwork. You know, you see it in symbolic form, but in dots and dashes and strokes. So the old traditional artists did astral travel. So when they actually did the artwork, see, when you see artwork on the wall, that's not where it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be on the ground, so you're looking down at it. So everything's doing is sort of like an aerial map of it all. See, to be able to do us in traditional art form, well, from above, all we are is six dots from above standing here. So that's how people would describe it. So people did a lot of aerial travel. You not only had a deeper understanding of what was going on up there, but also what's going on underneath the deep depth of the planet. And some people had it more than others, had that connection.
My name is Dr. Jim Gayling. I'm a paleontologist and a geologist from the South Australian Museum.
I want to raise with you something Terry Coulthard said, which was that not only did we astral travel, but we also did a comparable thing down into the depths of the Earth, and that's how we understood that resources lay there.
It's very clear that we as humans only use a very small part of our sensory intake and our experience. We don't have to live by our wits to actually understand what's under the ground or what the ground looks like from above. It's very clear that many other animals are able to do. We don't know how they do it. They do it. And it's not a surprise to me at all that Aboriginal people learnt how to do that. What the technique was, I don't know. Maybe that's still for science to find out. We are so reliant on technology that we're becoming more and more sceptical about people who do have these very environmentally attuned skills to understand navigation, to understand depth perception, and all those sorts of phenomena.
No, the mine is actually digging up a very sacred part of our culture, you know, because what they're doing is they're digging up part of a creation story. And so we certainly don't like the mining of the coal, but, you know, you can't tell white men not to do anything. They just go ahead and do it anyway. The spirit of our people are embedded in everything around us. You know, you can't rip them up. It's like taking somebody out of the grave. You're ripping part of your soul away, you know. You know, like when you mess with sight, you're actually taking away a piece of religion, a piece of culture, a piece of tradition. It's irreplaceable. The stories are like the Bible. You know, if you burnt all the Bibles in the world, it leaves people with nothing to build a framework of belief on, you know. And that's like that with us. We have to have these mountains, we have to have these hills, we have to have the country, so that we use it as a tool for teaching people about respect for Mother Earth, you know, how to live in harmony with it.
Waku, waku, wimiri, manda, wayana, yana. That's a little lullaby song, and Mum and Nanas used to sing for us. The babies, to rock the babies to sleep. I'm Linda, and I'm an Anyamatana, my Wepi. My father was a Kwian from Central Australia, and I'm a Haruru Hato, and I belongs to the North Wind Hato, Haruru woman. And I'd like to yata wanda a bit about Lee Creek and Mura Yata, a big Dreamtime stories, and a lot of children. Yakatis was born there, babies was born there. And I remember Ngamin Mata mothers used to say that Wunabi was buried there.
The umbilical cord?
That's it, yeah, the belly buttons, yeah. And they used to keep it for a few days, and they used to angat it and take it and number on it long. Dig a little hole, and they bury it then. Number tamanjanang and pile some rock on it then. When yakad is old enough, ngala wat nikil yakad apanabana, ngami weping will take that little yakadi back, nguni ranjad nidlawang. They'll go and show that little yakadi. One ngil yad nar nguni bi nambi itamat. Show that little yakadi where that little nguni bi is buried. Then when people ask them where they was born, oh, I was born up there in the coal mines. That's all. They gotta just tell them in the coal mines, because it's nothing there, eh? It's sad to talk about it now. If old people was around, they wouldn't allow that. They'll protect that area then, make a big fuss, eh? Because it's something they buried, it's very important, they gotta look after it. It's a cultural thing, yeah. At the Matana cultural thing. We're part of the land. The land is part of us.
Cliff told me that the Wunabi, the umbilical cord, and the fact that they're buried in the ground was a very important part of the Adnyamatna native title claim, because the claim to native title was explored not only through knowledge of the songs, stories and journeys of the creation ancestors, but also related to the birthplace of people. The Adnyamatna native title claim included reference to the significance of the birthplaces of Adnyamatna people whose Wunabis are buried between the two lakes, Lake Torrens and Lake Frome. The Wunabi buried in the ground is a deeply symbolic connection of people to country. At Lee Creek, the Adnyamatna people's Wunabis, as Linda says, have been dug from the ground by Lee Creek coal mine.
I feel depressed every time I go around that area. All I see there is hills and hills. No trees, just black hills with coal on it. And tractors going around and bombs going off. And it's like every time the coal train comes past, you barely can breathe.
Coley, it's one of the longest trains in the world. We've listened to that all our lives. It transports Yulu's coal to Port Augusta Power Station, and then it supplies South Australia with electricity.
Whilst we were staying in Copley, a small community about 15 kilometres south of the coalfields, we heard the Coley passing every night. The sound went on forever in the dark night. We woke each morning to view two beautiful mountains created by the Akura, the giant rainbow serpents who are part of Yulu's story.
But it wasn't only the people who read the smoke signals. Two Mura serpents read them as well. And they decided to follow Yulu down to the ceremony ground. The serpents rested near where the town of Copley is today. Curling around themselves, they formed two mountains there. The male serpent formed a small hill to the west. The female serpents formed the big hill to the east.
There's a little track there, see?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get out and have a look, eh?
Yeah. And these two snakes are called Akura.
So does the story go that when he lit the fire back at the place we were at previously, what's now Lee Creek Coalfields, that these snakes here at Copley saw that smoke signal also?
Yeah, they saw the signal and they waited and they knew he was coming. They seen him go past. There's a narrow we're tracking, you know. So they tracked him down. And as they were tracking him down, they started moving Mother Earth and made these big mountain ranges.
So those two snakes became these two hills that we're looking at right now?
Yes. This is the two snakes here. This is the beginning of the two snakes.
They're quite beautiful looking little mountains, aren't they? I guess geomorphologically you'd call them nearly a mesa, which basically says it's a circular landform with a hard cap on the top. That's the male on the left-hand side there, Cliff?
Yes.
And then the female seems to be a little bit...
And longer.
Yeah, longer, and they look like they're nearly talking to each other there, don't they?
Yes.
Yes.
Beautiful valley between them and... And the female's tail runs out into a couple of low-lying, rolling hills off to the east.
Only on the mountain itself, that's a black oak.
Oh, okay.
She oak.
On the head of the male serpent.
Yeah, that's the black oak.
But that whole female serpent is covered in a really soft green salt bush.
Yeah, yeah.
Those two hills, one's Anangarina, and the other one's is Watavinyana.
I could just walk around it, but I wouldn't like to climb.
Why?
Because it's scary. The old people used to tell us, Mum, anyway, used to tell us, don't go up near the, or climb that big hill. Akura will blow you away. Well, I just tell them to go and go out there and camp around. They'll hear a lot of things, they'll get scared. Where the Akura rumbles, we can hear him rumbles now and again. Sounds like a thunder rumbling sound.
Karnangarina. What are we doing?
And then the Akura, the giant serpent, followed him down and started moving the ocean floor, you know, to create one of the oldest mountain ranges in the world. You know. But we call it Ngapulayata, means our land. But the white man called it after Captain Matthew Flinders, which was a lot of the mountains were named after white early explorers. Yeah. But most of the mountains were named after Adnyamutna women in the beginning. When the early explorers came, you know, like Hare and Flinders and all that. But Flinders didn't even walk in the Flinders Ranges. He only seen it from Spencer Goff, Port Augusta, and said, oh, I'll call it Flinders Ranges after myself. Yeah.
After Yulu passed Copley, he travelled down towards Parachulna and Bukatu, an important ochre pit. Here he collected the ochre he needed to paint the bodies of the young initiates.
The two snakes followed Yulu. Then Yulu picked up the ochre at Bukatu. Bukatu ochre mine is between Parachulna and Bratana Gorge. And Bukatu is straight in here.
So I can see the red patch over there on the range, towards the top of the range. Were these ranges also here created by the movement of the serpents?
Yes. When the Yulu picked the ochre up, then the two Akuras, joint serpents, they created the Tubi ridges, and the ochre is on the western side of these two ridges that goes into Wupina Pound in the Ikara.
Was he also responsible for the creation of that ochre pit?
Well, he was the keeper of the ochre pit. And he's the guy that had to trade the ochre. And it was a good opportunity for him to pick it up to start the ceremony at Ikara in Wupina Pound.
It's amazing ochre. It's just something else. It's a silvery red, you know. It's iridescent. So when you see people with that ochre on dancing next to a fire, the reflection of the fire just coming off their body is just, oh, just mind-blowing, you know, just... You got to see it to believe it.
I do know of a geologist in the South Australian Museum who has experience. He mentioned that he has found it downstream in other rivers, that he believes it was that particular piece of ochre, and he believes it was taken by probably your ancestors previously when he was mapping at some point. So when we talk to him, we might be able to get a bit more of an insight from him as to what he thinks that mineralisation is.
Well, I've never been to the very important site, but I actually have seen a sample that was perhaps dropped on a track. And that material felt like, actually like the cosmetics that some women used to apply to their faces. It was quite waxy and soft and lustrous. If you imagine literally that you saw blood coming out of a vein, but it was solid blood. It was that waxy in your fingers that you could feel it. Had a greasy feel to it, and then when you opened your hands out, it had a glint to it that you can't really describe in adequate terms. Often the young initiated men who made the journey to the Flinders Ranges mined grindstones, and then they made a cake of ochre, which they actually put on the grindstone, and then they carried that with a hair strap on their heads and carried that many hundreds, perhaps even as much as 1,000 miles away to where they actually came from. So that trade in these materials from the Flinders Ranges was very important. And again, both those quantities, the sandstones and the ochre, turn out to be from very distinctive geological bands, like a barcode in the Flinders Ranges. You can actually put your finger on those layers. The ochre is really quite fascinating. It turns out that the Flinders Ranges ochre deposits, the best of them, line up in a band which coincides with a very important marker in geological history. It's the base of the Cambrian period, and the words get worse, it's the base of the Phanerozoic eon.
Yeah, so I guess to put it simply, we could probably call it the Cambrian explosion, where life really burst into existence on Earth.
Yeah.
Jim, can you tell us a little bit about what happened in that ochre bed, in those rocks that we've just been chatting about at that time?
For whatever reason, there's evidence that there was a huge amount of marine animal activity. That's why they were chewing into the seafloor. They were recycling chemicals. And as a result of that, there was huge blooms of bacteria, and they brought down metals from the ocean. And those metals of iron and copper and lead and zinc are minerals like hematite, galena, and sphalerite. And when those minerals oxidize, when those layers come back to the surface, one of the residues is this special iron oxide. It looks like rust to you and I, but that rust in its very special form is ochre. And the very best ochre has water in the structure, and it also has little flakes of micaceous iron that give it a glitter. So this is very special material, and that's not my story, but it's the coincidence between the importance of the ochre and that very important geological boundary, I think, cannot be understated. No one can visit these very special ochre deposits because they are the domain of the fully initiated and most senior elders of the indigenous community, the Adnamutna people in the Flinders Ranges.
So does that mean that you can no longer go to this ochre pit because there are no Willuru or Vadnapa men left?
Yes, only tribal men can go there, even if it's tribal men from the other areas, you know, like the Yarrabana or whatever. They can come down and get the ochre, as long as they went through ceremony. They still prepare to come. Today, no Adnyamatna, because all of our lawmen are gone, yeah.
Oh, okay, so even, you know, Pitjantjatjara could come down.
Yes.
Any community that travels into this country that has gone through the initiation ceremony is permitted to go to this country.
They can go to that site, yeah, and collect ochre. But normally today they get in touch with the Adnyamutna Traditional Lands Association and say they want it specifically for a ceremony, and people would say, yes, okay, go in and get it, yeah. As long as you're a lawman, you know.
Adnyamutna initiation ceremonies came to an end in 1947 as a result of the influence of missionaries. But despite that, 35 Adnyamutna men, including Cliff Coulthard, travelled to the northwest corner of South Australia, where they went through law with senior Pitjantjatjara Yankunpitjara lawmen. As a result of having gone through the appropriate level of ceremony, even though it wasn't Adnyamutna law, they're able to visit and care for the ochre pit at Bukittu, as well as other important areas of country that only those who've been through ceremony are permitted to visit.
This ochre pit here, I've been to it and several times, but it's been only mined by Aboriginal people. No white man has touched it.
Thank you.
Caravan. That was producer Liz Thompson there with Yulu's Coal. Thanks to Senior Adnyamatna Cultural Custodian Cliff Coulthart and to the other custodians who helped with the program. Original recordings were by Taz Miller and Liz Thompson, assisted by Gavin Spokes. Lots more detail on the website, where you can also listen again. Just go to abc.net.au/rn and look for Earshot on the program list. Next Monday, we return to the Flinders Ranges with the second part of Yulu's Coal. But in the meantime, here's an atmospheric recording from the region. This is the Dawn Chorus of Spiny-Cheeked Honeyeaters by Andrew Skiok. See you next week. Thank you.